Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2003 to Shirin Ebadi for her efforts for democracy and human rights.
And with that announcement, the 56-year-old Iranian lawyer and human rights activist becomes the first Muslim woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Ebadi is used to being the exception. In 1974, she became Iran's first woman judge. That is until the Islamic Revolution 5 years later, when the Ayatollahs declared women too emotional and irrational to lead a tribunal. Undaunted, Ebadi devoted the next 2+ decades to advocating for the rights of women and children in Iran's ultra-conservative political climate. Doing so made her a political target, but didn't keep her from taking on the kinds of cases that other lawyers wouldn't touch. Investigating a series of murders of political opposition leaders and intellectuals, representing the families of slain liberals, and ultimately being jailed for 22 days in 2000. In its announcement of the award, the head of the Nobel Committee, Ulas Mjøs, also had this to say.
It's a pleasure for the Norwegian Nobel Committee to award a peace prize to a woman who is part of the Muslim world and of whom that world should be proud.
Expressing its hope that the people of Iran would receive the news of an unprecedented win with joy, the Nobel Committee spokesman continued saying, "We hope the prize will be an inspiration for all those who struggle for human rights and democracy in her country, in the Muslim world, and in all countries where the fight for human rights needs inspiration and support." Connection listeners, in its recognition of individual achievement, does the Nobel Peace Prize also send that powerful political message? And if so, to whom? The Muslim world at large? The West? Should the Nobel Peace Prize for Peace carry a political edge, or should it simply acknowledge a career of outstanding achievement? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us. 1-800-423-TALK. And we have a spectacular lineup of guests to help us understand not only this woman, but the prize. Joining us today, I want to go first to Tehran, where the BBC reporter Jim Muir is standing by. Jim, hello.
Hello, Dick.
Expressing its hope that the people of Iran would receive the news of an unprecedented win with joy. Well, how is the news being received?
Well, insofar as it is being received, and it's no thanks to the state television and radio, because they haven't even announced the news here, despite the fact it's making headlines around the world. We've talked to some ordinary people, and they are indeed quite joyful and very proud at what has happened. It's hard to find any dissenting voice in that, but there are indeed dissenting voices, because at least the strong half of the regime itself is not going to be amused by this, and already some right-wing commentators have put this down to yet another attempt, as they see it, by Europe to put political pressure on Iran, using the human rights issue as the stick for that. So obviously it is going to be welcomed by the reformist trend, who are in the majority here, by their supporters among the public, by all the people who want change here, but not by those who are resisting it, namely the people who have most of the power, the hardliners.
Jim, the last time we spoke, there were students in the streets, and that demonstration faded away. Can an announcement like this actually change the political balance in Iran? Would the students be encouraged enough by news of this to go back into the streets, for example?
I doubt if it would have that physical an effect. No, I think in a general kind of way, it will embolden and encourage those who are pressing for change, at least to realize that there are people outside who share those ideals and those ambitions. But in organic terms, I can't see this being the kind of thing that tilts political balances one way or another. It will certainly give more moral strength to those who are arguing for more human rights, more democracy here. But it's not going to have a kind of measurable effect in tilting the balance one way or another, in my view.
Jim, I know how busy you've been today, and I want to thank you for taking a few moments with us.
You're most welcome.
BBC reporter Jim Muir, from reporting direct from Tehran. Connection listeners, our number 1-800-423-8255. This hour, assessing the award of the Nobel Peace Prize to Shirin Ebadi. My guests today, Ali Banu Azizi, co-director of the Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies program at Boston College. He is here in the Boston studio. Ali, it's nice to have you back on the program.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And joining us, Manaz Akhami. She is Iran's Minister of State for Women's Affairs, joining us from a studio in Washington, D.C. Manaz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, when I say that you are Iran's Minister of State for Women's Affairs, you were Minister of State for Women's Affairs, right? You're not with the current regime. Just so I could be clear on that.
Unfortunately, that's not possible.
No. Tell me what you thought when you heard the news this morning.
Well, pure joy, really pure joy. And not only because Shirin, a colleague and a friend and co-subversive, I would think, definitely deserves this and has worked so hard to be really recognized in this fantastic way, but also for what it means to all of us, to the Iranian people. And I might say we just, my organization, Women's Learning Partnership, just finished a two-day conference last night with representatives of women from around the world and especially from Muslim-majority countries. And I can't imagine what it means to them to get this kind of support for their struggle, this kind of support for the voices of moderation, of the voices of reason in the region. And so in every way, it's been a fantastic phenomenon.
Ali, the wish of the Nobel Committee that this will be heard, do you think it will be heard?
I think it will be heard, and I want to start out by echoing my good friend Mahnaz Afkhami said, that this is indeed a glorious day for women's rights in Iran, and I think more broadly in the Muslim world. I think the Nobel, the Norwegian Peace Prize Committee, put it very well. If I may quote, they said that no society deserves to be labeled civilized unless the rights of women and children are respected. That's a very powerful statement, and I would add that no society deserves to be called democratic until those rights are fully respected. And indeed, this is the struggle to which Shirin Ebadi devoted her entire professional life. And in that sense, I think it's a joyous and inspiring example for all Muslim women and certainly for Iranian women.
There is actually one woman whose reaction to this I'm eager to hear. Mehrangiz Kar is an Iranian women's rights activist and a woman, in fact, who was arrested and jailed 3 years ago for her criticism of Iran's constitution. And Shirin Ebadi was Mehrangiz Kar's lawyer. Mehrangiz is joining us now on the phone from Charlottesville,
yes,
Virginia.
Yeah, I am.
Thank you, and welcome to the program.
I'm very happy today. And I think this prize is a prize to all the people in Iran who are working so hard, trying so hard for changement in their society and for changement in political system toward democracy. And I really admire this judgment.
Can I ask you, though, do you think that this will make a difference in Iran?
Yes, I think so. I think it would be a center of new challenge in Iran, because I'm sure that some part of conservative, and that they are on power, they will be unsatisfied and they will be angry with that. But some other parts of government, they will be happy. And I think this challenge will continue, and it would be effective in political inside Iran and in political relation with foreign and
Ali
West countries.
To get in here.
I am just delighted that you were able to get Mehrangi's car. I think I could say with all certainty that in the minds of all observers of the human rights situation in Iran, the names Shirin Ebadi and Mehrangi's car were associated. They were part of the same group, same struggle. And I would further make the point very briefly that when one thinks about human rights in Iran and the struggle for human rights in Iran, it is significant that the three names that come to mind, Shirin Ebadi, Mehrangi's car, and Shahla Lahiji, all three of them are women. And I'm not talking merely about women's rights, of course, to which
rights,
they have made tremendous contributions, but human rights broadly, that these three women have been at the forefront of the struggle. And that is a universally accepted judgment, I believe, in the among experts and observers of Iran.
Mehrangi's car, let me ask you one question, and that is, if you were to tell us what it is that makes Shirin Ebadi so remarkable, what would you say?
Because she is really brave woman. And I was witness during the time that all lawyers didn't agree to be a lawyer for some political political prisoner. They tried to get their signature, and she tried her best to be their lawyer. And if sometimes she couldn't do anything for them, but she could talk about their situation, and she could give news all the world about their situation. And that's why...
You're saying she would never be silenced by the people in Iran?
No. She never been silent, and she was every time ready to be lawyer for political prisoner during a very dangerous time.
Mehrangi's car, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Mahnaz Afkhami, I do want to hear you on the same point. If you were to try and crystallize for us the essence of Shirin Ebadi, what would you say is her greatest contribution?
Well, I would add to what Mehrangi's just said by pointing to her way of pushing the envelope, so to speak, trying to increase the space and so forth. And her manner is one of consensus building, of thoughtfulness, of reasonable argument, and of mobilizing public support in sensible and rational ways, you know, in the part of, these may not seem sort of extraordinary, but in our part of the world and in our country, where extremism seems to be the norm, it is very important to have people who are willing to work through the processes of democratic action and take the trouble to convince, to build up support. And I think that's what Shirin does in her struggle.
Connection listeners, a chance this hour to measure the recent announcement of the Nobel Peace Prize to Shirin Ebadi. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. There are certainly political messages in the award. Who should be listening? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Support. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Taking the measure this hour of Shirin Ebadi, this year's winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. With me in the studio here in Boston, Ali Banu Azizi, co-director of Middle Eastern and Islamic Studies program at Boston College. And Mahnaz Afkhami is with us. She was Secretary General of the Women's Organization of Iran. That's, for people here in this country, sort of equivalent to now, a very powerful and activist organization. She was also Minister of State for Women's Affairs, but she left Iran in 1979 at the time of the revolution, has known Shirin Ebadi for the past 30 years. But I did say when we broke that we need to take in part the measure of the politics of this award, and no one better to help us with that than Erwin Abrams. He is an expert, perhaps the expert, on the history of the Nobel Peace Prize. In fact, his book, The Nobel Peace Prize and Laureates, was extremely helpful to me and the staff here in helping us make sense of the sequence of awards. Erwin, it's good to have you on the program.
Good to be here.
Tell me how you see this in context of awards that have been given this decade to the United Nations and to Kofi Annan and to the East Timorese activists. Where does this one fit?
Well, I'm particularly glad that this is a woman. There have only been 11 women in all the 100 and more years of the prize. And I'm glad and it was really a surprise. As you probably know, and I think you mentioned, the favorite was the Pope. And in the betting odds, there were betting odds, the Pope was 5-2 and Havel was something 7-1, and Ebadi was 21-1, so that she wasn't even considered as a likely person. But I'm so glad they not only got a woman, but I think a prize for Iran, an Iranian woman. I think our other guests have made it very clear what that means to them. And I think internationally that means a great deal to the rest of us as well.
Erwin, there is a long list of nominees that is given to a 5-member Norwegian Nobel Committee in Oslo. In this case, I think they had something like 140 individuals and 25 different organizations. But it does come down to the 5 members on that committee. And if you look at the decision that they've made this year, do you see in that a message for only the hardline Iranian politicians, or do you see a message that is also aimed at the West and at other parts of the world?
No, I think it's clearly a message to the world. If you look at just the last 3 women who won the prize, they're all human rights activists and champions. There's Suu Kyi from Burma. There's Rigoberta, the wonderful Indian from Guatemala, and now from Iran, we have our great activist for human rights. So that they have, in the last year since 1991, they have 3 women and 3 women for human rights. There's a 4th woman who is Jody Williams, who won the prize for the landmine campaign.
Right.
But there is a much better average for women than there had been in earlier years.
And Ali Banu Azizi, the mention of the pro-democracy stand that Shirin has taken, I'm wondering whether or not that there will be, in fact, a backlash from any parts of the Arab or Muslim world saying, you know, stop lecturing us on how we're supposed to run our affairs. We can't expect there to be a certain amount of disdain from the dictators that are running some of these countries. But I'm wondering whether or not within, just at the street level, you think that some people will say, stop telling us how to run our own affairs.
You are, of course, referring to the reactions of Iranians on the street.
When we begin to hear more of that.
Remember that this movement, the human rights movement in Iran, is very much embedded within the pro-democracy movement, which, of course, has a long history, but at least since 1997, under the present regime, with the election of Khatami, that has been very much the mood of the majority of Iranians. And in that context, the role of women in the election of Khatami and more generally in the pro-democracy movement has been an extremely important and pivotal role. Therefore, I think the majority of Iranians, certainly those who voted in these elections,
welcome,
as Jim Muir pointed out,
right,
from Tehran, would welcome this. Undoubtedly, within the more conservative reactionary circles, this would not be treated positively.
1-800-423-8255. Let's take a call from Wakefield, Massachusetts now. Afshin is calling in. Hi, Afshin.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for calling.
I do believe this is a very wonderful day for the world. It's Ms. Shirin is well deserved. I've been a prisoner. I've been a political prisoner back in Iran back in 1982 to 1984, and I really don't have to elaborate how vicious and how barbarian the prisons could get in Iran. And because of the courageous people like Shirin is definitely the people who were in the prison didn't felt as bad and left out because people like Shirin could bring the watchdogs like the Amnesty International and other human groups into the Iran to watch over the shoulder of the regime.
Afshin, when you were in prison 20 years ago, did you know this woman's name?
Not at all, and I was so much in joy and tear today hearing the wonderful news.
Do you
no,
think...
No, I did not, and...
I wanted to ask you whether or not you think that the award to her will make a difference in Iran.
It's very complicated, Iran. I think Iran's movement has already started it. It's you do see the students are in the street all the time. People are demanding the change from the regime. I think Khatami's presidency was a good sign. It's given he's a mullah as well, but you could see almost 75% of the people came out and vote. I think the vote turnout in Iran was much higher than anywhere else I could think of. I think politically people became much more mature and they understand their vote is counted.
Afshin, I'm going to interrupt you simply because your telephone line is deteriorating, but I want to thank you for calling in. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Manaz Afkhami, let me come back to you if I can. I read in the news wires this morning that Shirin Ebadi is in Paris on this day. Yes. Is she able to work in Iran? Is she in exile? Is she allowed to go back into that country?
No, she works in Iran, and she works with children's rights and women's rights, and she was not able to practice law for 5 years, but now she is working and doing mobilizing for rights. She's working specifically on a very important item of the law, and that is increasing the age of minimum age of marriage for girls, which is 9 years right now in Iran. And she argues that both on the basis of the incredible violence against the child marriage, but also because these children are tried as adults in courts as well.
Will it be possible is it likely in any way that she'll be prevented from going back to Tehran after the award of this peace prize?
I don't believe so. I think that the regime is very sensible to the criticism outside and very sensitive and responsive in their own ways, of course. But they are aware that such an extraordinary, possibly the highest possible recognition that can be given to the citizen of a global citizen, I don't think that they would dare do anything to her. As a matter of fact, I think this would be a protection for her. And she's been a human rights monitor for Human Rights Watch and has done other human rights activity internationally, but I think now she will be probably better protected.
To Brockton, Massachusetts now, and Joe is joining us. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. What a wonderful accomplishment, and how exciting it is to see this going to an Iranian woman. We have a culture that's so different from that. We look at that as so barbaric, and yet in our culture, peace and people who are for peace are considered to be on the lunatic fringe. It's amazing how little recognition they get to something that's so incredibly important. Representative Kucinich is running for president and has decided to, he's got about 35 congressmen putting a bill in to create a Department of Peace as a cabinet-level department, which would work not only to make war irrelevant, but also to handle the violence in our culture, such as spousal abuse, elder abuse.
The interesting thing here is that when we look at what she has to do, Ali, in the work that she is facing in Tehran, she's Mahnaz mentioned the age of a bride, but the whole notion of the testimony of a man carrying more weight than a woman, the husband's permission for a woman to work abroad or to travel, these are all issues that she has made very much her own business to work on. Can you say that she's making or has made progress in these areas?
Yes, I think she has. And I think she has, by doing so, by focusing precisely on these issues that are absolutely central to the daily lives of women and children in Iran, she has helped establish the whole realm, the whole arena of human rights as an integral part of any form of reform in the Iranian society. So whereas there are many women and men who are involved in the political struggle for democracy, mm-hmm. precisely by focusing on the human rights in the proper sense of the term, in the more limited sense of the term, but obviously with enormous political echoes in the whole system, she has made a unique contribution as an attorney, as a human rights activist, and as a women's rights activist.
Let's go.
You know, another thing, if I may add,
yes, go ahead.
To what Ali just said, Shirin was one of the people with Mehrangiz and others who worked very hard with us to create the family status code, the family protection law prior to the revolution, which was one of the most advanced in the Muslim world, the most advanced in the Muslim world. And the nullification of that was the first act of Mr. Khomeini. So she is constantly referring back to what people had and what they have lost in terms of women's rights. And I think that that puts things into more of a perspective. And in fact, what happens in Iran as well as much of the rest of the Muslim world is that women and their rights and their legal place in society and the way they are defined as citizens is at the center of the democracy movement in these countries, because they are the ones, half of the population, who are really in the most despicable legal situation, not comparable to anywhere else, yet they are women who are educated, who are articulate, who are, have had organizational experience and so forth. So there is this dichotomy with the levels of sophistication and involvement of women and the legal status that is imposed on them. And also their wish to retain their cultural and religious expression and commitment while changing the laws. And Shirin, I think, exemplifies all that.
1-800-423-8255. Next call from Ashland, Massachusetts. Imran's joining us. Hi, Imran.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to say that you kind of brought up the issue, like, you know, what messages could be sent, and perhaps one that's not intended, but I think may exist, is the idea that, you know, people in the Muslim world or the Islamic world do pay attention to issues such as human development and human rights. And I think that certainly since 9/11, there's been a concerted, you know, full court press to try to demonize and make the Muslim world look like it is barbaric and that, you know, people don't think about these things. And so I'm encouraged by this award because I think that it demonstrates to the world, especially to critics here in the West, that, you know, yes, Muslims do actually think about these things and struggle mightily to try to affect change.
Let's ask Erwin Abrams whether or not it's fair to assume that that was a part of the motivation, not to take anything away from Shirin's own accomplishment, but was that part of the motivation behind the committee, do you suppose?
Oh, I think so. I think that they've been looking at the Muslim world for some time, trying to find someone who would be a proper. They have two other Muslim winners. One is Arafat, who isn't in the best reputation these days. The other is Sadat, who is a martyr to peace, and we certainly cherish his memory. So that I think that the committee was looking for something like this. They might have looked also for a Palestinian and an Israeli side, but there was nothing to be found there, and I think this is a remarkable decision, and it means a great deal in the world.
The point that you're making, Erwin, is that when the committee is looking to send a message, it's one that is very tied up with what's in the headlines today.
Well, yes and no. Well, they did consider Havel, which would not be the headlines today, although he didn't get it. And, of course, the Pope was considered. It would be very hard to say, since it is all secret, and as you know, and it was good for me, since I don't know Norwegian very well, that I didn't have to read minutes. They don't share their minutes ever. They don't take them. So that we don't really know what the committee is talking about. And this committee is a relatively new one. There are three new members. Three went off last year for the end of terms and all the rest. And so there's no track record to examine to try to figure out what they might do. And I think that they we don't know how they can. It's hard to answer your question because this is so secret. But if you look at 100 years of prizes, it goes many ways. And there are often surprises like this one, when people didn't expect that this would be the winner, and it turned out to be better than all the favorites that the so-called experts had contemplated.
Erwin, I want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us today in the program.
I'm very glad. I enjoyed what you're doing, Dick, and carry on.
Thanks indeed. Erwin Abrams is author of the Nobel Peace Prize and laureate, as well as an upcoming book. Watch for this one, The Iraq War and Its Consequences, Thoughts of Nobel Peace Laureates and Eminent Scholars. In fact, it was Erwin Abrams who nominated Jimmy Carter for the Nobel Peace Prize last year. Quick comment just before we go to a break, Ali. It was something that Mahnaz was saying earlier, and that is that there's a certain shield of invincibility that may be on Shirin for as a result of having received the award. Do you share her point of view that it gives her perhaps a little more standing, perhaps a little more protection?
Absolutely. In fact, that was my first reaction when I heard the news, that thank God for this prize, because the likelihood of her being put back in jail or harassed or subjected to various other kinds of maltreatment and threat was much, much reduced. For all intents and purposes, I think it has been removed. I very much agreed with Mahnaz that the regime, I think, fully appreciates that fact.
Connection listeners, we all know the news now. Shireen Ebadi as the 2003 winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, and lots of messages embedded in that. Tell us what you're thinking and who you think the messages are aimed at. 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Support for.
I'm Dick Gordon. I'm holding in my hand a hardcover book called History and Documentation of Human Rights in Iran. It is written by Shireen Ebadi, and if you look to the table of contents, you find a very specific, lawyerly, methodical walk through slavery, forced labor, genocide, racial discrimination. This is the work that this woman has been doing for decades now. On this morning, the Nobel Peace Prize Committee gave her the award for 2003. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to bring you into our conversation about the accomplishments of Shireen Ebadi. Next to Azin, she's calling in, from Boston. Azin.
It's actually a she.
I'm sorry about that, but I'll get it right next time.
Hi, I'm a female Iranian Muslim, so I'm just overjoyed today with this great news. And I think the prize sends three messages. One of them is to the Iranian people, obviously, that extends them a message of hope, support, and empowerment, and which is something they really need.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is to the hardliners, that you are being watched, and despite what it seems, they are very sensitive to this issue of being watched. And most importantly, I think, it sends a message to the West, which is let people build their own movement, let them build it with their own, within their own system of values, within their own culture. And the outcome might look very different.
When you say build own movement, Ashina, are you saying don't interfere? Is that part of what you're saying?
Don't interfere. Yeah, I mean, you know, there was a strong movement growing in Iran. And then when Bush goes up on the podium and says an axis of evil, it sort of puts the whole country in this, you know, state of shock, and it in effect gives the hardliners the tool they need to just go in and slam any kind of opposition, any voice, you know, and essentially, you know, interference is mainly the thing that needs to be avoided, and also just our system in the West is the best, and everybody has to look just like us. I mean, that's just really wrong.
You know, it's a wonderful point that you raise, Ashin, because it's a feature of Shirin's work that I want to make sure that we pay a little bit of attention to. And maybe I can get Ali, both you and Mahnaz, to speak just a little bit about the way that she has taken the principles, the doctrine of universal human rights, and found a way to make that work within Sharia law. It's not as if there was no place for it there before, but the misconceptions that exist mean that somebody needs to address how the two work together. Would you say, Ali, that she's in fact trying to recast an understanding of human rights?
Right. Remember, we are talking about a practicing attorney as
right.
well as a former judge, a human rights activist, and someone who writes on human rights matters, let's say a scholar of human rights. And all of these are very important. I think the most important part is the fact that she has been a practicing attorney, and as one of the callers, or perhaps Mahnaz said, that, or Mehrangiz Kar said, she dauntlessly took on a number of very, very difficult and dangerous cases in the course of her practice. So by doing that, I think she has given special attention and created the legal realm as a very important part of the struggle for democracy. In my judgment, that part, that space, the legal juridical dimension or area of society is absolutely essential to the development of democracy, because at the end of the day, if there are no legal protections, it is impossible to engage in a non-violent democratic movement. This has been her contribution, by trying to take universal principles of human rights and examining the ramifications of those principles in the legal realm and challenging the political authorities to remain true, on the one hand, to their own Islamic faith and principles, but then on the other hand, to try to accommodate these universal human principles to which the government of Iran is a signatory, or at least to the majority of which the government is a signatory.
So, Mahnaz, now you've lived in this country for 20 years, and so you've heard all the sort of there is no common ground between Sharia law and common law and civil law. Is the work that Shirin is doing actually contributing to bringing all these disparate senses of how the law works together under an umbrella of human rights? Is that a way of looking at it?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, what Shirin does wonderfully is sort of is a representative of the kind of work that is being done in an ever-growing network of women in Muslim-majority countries. And I think, referring back to your earlier question, I think the Nobel Prize Committee also had that in mind in encouraging that work. What the basic parameters of that are is that rights are rights. Human beings are no different. No one, if you ask women, you know, like my organization constantly has workshops doing that. Mm-hmm. When you get a group of women together anywhere in the Muslim world, including Iran, and ask them, what kind of rights do you want? You would see that naturally they come up with a list that resembles at the end very much the Declaration of Human Rights. So universality of it is not in question for this network and for Shirin herself. It is the applicability and the implementation, which has to be done in ways that are indigenous, that are in ways that people understand and relate to. So sources that are brought in Shirin's work, for instance, and in the other network members' work, is that they try to rely on the religious texts, the Quran, the Hadith, as well as literary, folkloric, mythological, and other stories of our homes and our past. So you have the universal rights, but you make it understandable and applicable because you give it the indigenous context. And so you push the envelope, as I said earlier, and this is what she's trying to do. And she's trying to mobilize not only the governmental entities, who are very difficult to mobilize, but also the people on the other hand. That is, make it possible for people to see, men and women, that there need not be any conflict between believing and living in freedom. That, in fact, believing helps you to live in freedom if you keep the two realms separate and if you use the realm of belief as a resource for the realm of rights. And this is what she does, and in that she represents a whole lot of others in Muslim societies who are working in this manner.
All right, our next call is coming in from Lexington, Massachusetts. Peter's on the line. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I wonder if a note of caution should be introduced that in reversing Khomeini's lowering the marriageable age to 9, which he did because Muhammad married Aisha, or consummated his marriage when he was, I don't know how old he was, but she was 9, and in trying to acquire or establish legal equality for women, that it's going to be very hard to interpret the immutable words of Quran and Hadith. And there are others outside Iran, like Ali Sina, who suggest that one might abandon Islam altogether, and some suggest Zoroastrianism. I just don't think that...
Peter, I need you to put this in terms that we can all understand. Are you saying that she's...
I think Islam, as Reza Afshari has pointed out in his book on Islam and human rights, is simply... cannot be reconciled with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights.
All right, Mahnaz so, Afkhami, is there that disconnect there that Peter's describing?
No, not at all. I think this is a sort of a stereotyping and sort of a kind of prejudicial looking of one religion. The three monotheistic religions, which came in the same little geographic space and have the same history, the same ethnic background, basically are very similar in that they offer a huge amount of positive resources for justice and equity. And they also have material in them that was related to a different time, a different place. So all of them can be resources and are resources. I was mentioning this conversation we had the last 2 days with Muslim, Jewish, and Christian women from the Middle East, North Africa. The whole title of our discussion was Clash or Consensus, and what we want to do is to see the similarities, and there are huge similarities. They all come from the same background. They use the same stories, the same narratives, really, same names, of prophets and imams and religious leaders. So the idea is not that one is less conducive to human rights or democracy. The idea is how people live those religions. So it's not Islam that is in conflict with democracy. It's certain groups of Muslim people. The same goes for Judaism and Christianity and any other religion. So I think they all have the same characteristics, and we need to use the positive resources in the work that we do. And that's actually what we are doing, in fact.
Ali, I want you to try and give me your idea of the where the echoes of this will be heard. In recent reporting, we've heard stories of women in southern Iraq, not Iran, so women in southern Iraq who are finding it now difficult to be as free as they were before. And so the Western understanding of what social and cultural and legal constraints on Muslim women are is something that people are still struggling with, trying to make sense of just exactly what kind of freedoms women in Afghanistan have, and whether or not that comes from the mosque, whether or not it comes just from a culture that has less to do with religion and more to do with the structure of society. And and whether or not the work that Shireen is doing, the award that she receives today, is actually going to be heard in all those different places. We'll make a difference to an imam in Egypt or in Afghanistan. We'll make a difference to women living in Karbala.
Those are all important questions, but I would only put it, would it make a difference not necessarily to the imams in Karbala, but to women who are struggling in these societies? In fact, the very societies that you mentioned, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iran, they have very vigorous women's movements. In Afghanistan, women attempted to and are attempting to take a role, to take, you know, charge in the framing of the constitution, or at least to have a voice in the framing of the constitution. And the same thing is going on in Iraq today. So I think the message of the...
It's not easy for them.
Of course it's not easy. It's a struggle. But the image should not be one of women taking all of this, you know, lying down. Mm. It is women asserting their rights, working on their rights, being quite articulate about those rights, as Mahnaz said, using the local traditions of their societies to bolster, to present arguments about those rights. That is the work of Shireen Ebadi, and I think it has many parallels, actually, in the Muslim world. So the impact is going to be, first and foremost, in emboldening, encouraging, inspiring other women in the Muslim world, and I think that's an extremely significant political message as well.
Mahnaz, just a very quick last question to you. We often hear people dismissing Al Arabiya television and Al Jazeera television as only giving a very narrow point of view of the world. Will the award to Shireen be properly noted on those networks? Will the news get out that way?
Some of it will, because there is a lot of diverse opinion being aired on these channels. Unfortunately, because of the war and because of the situation, the Israeli-Palestinian situation, there is much more anger and unhappiness and pessimism being aired. But nevertheless, no one can ignore such an extraordinary honor to one of ours, a woman of our region, and no one can ignore what kind of a movement, what kind of a struggle that represents and supports. And that support is just incredibly important to what happens in this region in the coming years.
Mahnaz, thank you so much for coming in to join us on the program today.
Thank you.
Mahnaz Akhani is president of the Women's Learning Partnership. Earlier in the hour, we talked with Erwin Abrams and Marangiz Kar, Iranian women's rights activist and professor. Ali Banu Azizi, thank you so much for coming in. It was great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.